Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 234 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today in the studio live is Spencer Lafferman.
Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
We were just talking about something very interesting, and it was what was our, well, I remembered what my first DVD was. It's like such a core memory for me. We went to Best Buy, and my dad was like, pick out a movie. And I can't even believe my dad let me pick out what I picked out. Because Christian.
At the time. And Christian, yeah, for sure.
Christian household.
For sure.
But it's funny because my dad loved watching like Happy Gilmore with me. He loved watching like not Ace Ventura, but Jim Carrey movies with me, which I know is an Ace Ventura movie. But my first movie, we went to Best Buy. They bought the DVD player, which was like $500
back then. Now a normal DVD player. Well, there's no. I was gonna say
a normal DVD player is probably like $50.
I mean, even a regular Blu-ray player is You could probably get a decentish one for like $75.
Yeah. So we went. My mom picked out a movie. My dad picked out a movie, and I picked out Ace Ventura: Pet Detective because I love that movie. And you said you couldn't remember what your first DVD was, but your first VHS.
The first VHS that I remember watching, and obviously. I was either my dad probably owned this one, and I feel like it just made my entire personality because, as you know, I fucking love Batman, and my first one was the 1989 Batman movie.
Yeah.
But he also had Laserdisc, so like I was introduced to Laserdisc probably before DVD. So
yeah.
VHS and Laserdisc, I was introduced to before
Laserdisc DVD. Was like collector edition level.
I mean, they're essentially it's just a record. It's a giant DVD. It's a record. And I remember the first time I saw Speed, Empire Strikes Back, Titanic. All of these movies were on Laserdisc.
Yeah.
The Abyss.
That was like the high. That was like the high quality. You
that
know,
was
back
that was
then.
Back then's HD. Like
yeah,
it was the first time you actually got like you know because with VHS you only get like stereo surround sound because it couldn't hold anything else.
Right.
Hell, you'd be lucky to get that. But you have to have some sound. but with Laserdisc was the first time that, and this is just for me. I don't know if it's a fact, but at least for me is when I witnessed surround sound. Now was it great surround sound that we have nowadays? Absolutely fucking not.
No.
But you know the great thing about Jurassic Park was the first movie to become on physical to have the DTS surround sound.
Ooh.
So I don't remember if it had it on the Laserdisc or it had it on the DVD first, but I did see it on Laserdisc first, and that was when the first. More than just mono speaker was introduced to me.
Yeah, because your dad's always been about surround sound, and he worked sound design, whatever it was called.
Shit. Sounds absolute sound.
Absolutely. Sounds perfect, whatever it is. He always had nice setups. So, yeah, it's really fun to see where people have come from with their what they saw first on DVD, VHS, whatever. That's the earliest memory I have of DVD was Ace Ventura. And then, of course, I mean, I still have that. And it's the, I don't know what they're called, but it's the DVDs where like the little clasp you have.
Oh, the snap case.
Snap case. There we go. Yeah. I have like six snap cases.
That was a Warner Brothers thing.
Yeah. Matrix is another one I have.
Yep.
C-Spot Run, Ace Ventura, and I have a couple more that I can't remember. But yeah, I'm never going to get rid of those because it's like those were like first generation DVDs that I never want to like let go.
I have like, I have like five or six snap cases of movies. I have Spawn. I have Sleepers.
Sleepers.
It's got probably like the biggest cast in 90s history. You got like if you played the Kevin Bacon game, like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon,
you could get there in one
with Sleepers because Kevin Bacon is in Sleepers. You got Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro, Kevin Bacon. Fuck.
Everyone. Matt Damon, probably.
Actually.
Is he really?
He might
Matt
be.
Damon, Ben Affleck?
Dude, I'm looking this up. Hold on. Dude, it's got everybody and their mom in this fucking movie.
Oh, everybody and their mom.
Yeah, and their mom.
Giggity.
Sleepers. Yeah, so this movie came out in 96.
If Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are in there, the podcast is over. Welcome to your first 5-minute podcast.
All right, so you got Robert De Niro, Kevin Bacon, Brad Pitt, Jason Patrick, Billy Crudup, Minnie Driver.
Oh, shit.
Dustin Hoffman. Like, you got everybody.
Okay, not okay, no Matt. Matt
no,
Affleck.
I'm actually looking.
No Matt Affleck or Ben Damon.
Yep, none of those. Like Jeffrey Donovan, you got everybody in this fucking movie. It's a great movie too, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
I have this. It's a really bad movie, but it's a guilty pleasure of mine with Antonio Banderas. It's called and Lucy Liu. It's called Ballistic versus X. It's basically just like 90 minutes of two assassins just like trying to kill each other, okay. And they don't know why.
The 90s.
You can't beat those movies. You can't beat them. I don't care who you are. 90s action will never be matched.
Will never be awesome. Will never be not awesome.
Yeah,
there
not
we go.
Awesome.
Sorry.
Yeah.
There we go.
They won't be matched. I don't care how hard you try.
Double negatives. Terrible. So what's up, Spencer? What's been going on? Nothing. What have you seen? Have you seen anything awesome lately, horror-wise, or no?
Oh, well, I should have just kept my letterbox open.
I should have just told you this before you came.
Yeah,
you know, into
I needed
this,
to be prepared.
Into the studio, but, you know, I thrive on chaos, and I...
Well, obviously, the movie we're reviewing today, I've rewatched and really
yes.
like.
Yes.
I recently rewatched the 2006 Black Christmas and liked it even more. This is like my seventh time watching it, but for some reason, I liked it, like, more than I ever liked it.
I watched that today.
Nice.
Today, before the podcast, after I watched Advent
like this
Calendar.
This is my quick review on it. No spoiler. Not
go for it.
Matters,
go
yeah.
for it.
So first, I always had it at 3.5 stars, like the three times that I've rated it. My yeah. fourth time I've had it at 4 stars,
ooh.
Which is the same that I have the original one at.
Oh!
Oh, no!
Okay.
And I rewatched the original one after just to see if I felt the same as that one or more, and
oh
I feel
God.
The same level for different reasons.
Nipples
but same
are
level.
Fucking hard right now.
Your nipples
oh
are hard.
Oh, my God. Cutting glass.
Let's go. Anyway. Fuck. This is over. We're done.
This is what happens when I don't have you on the podcast in like in a month. This is what happens. We get wild and crazy.
This is wild and crazy, guys.
Too wild and crazy. Okay, go.
So anyway, so crazy what time can do to a way that you like or dislike a movie you've seen a lot. And in this case, it made me love this movie even more. It's unapologetic when it comes to the kills. Once it starts, it doesn't let up, not even a little. This movie is a definition of a guilty pleasure, and I will die on that hill.
Yeah, no, agreed. Okay.
And I've seen this movie since 2006.
Yeah.
I've seen this for almost 20 years, so, and for some reason, this watch, I'm like, you know what? This movie's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't ever dislike it. This movie's just cooler now for me. I just like it a lot more.
I felt that way. So I rewatched it last year, and the exact moment you're having is what I had last year. I was like... Because I didn't like it, like prior to that watch, I was like, it was boring.
And I remember you telling me you didn't like
and
it.
And then I watched it last year, and I was like, oh shit, I love this movie.
And it's crazy because I haven't watched that or the original since 2019.
Ooh.
So like, time did do better for. I mean, I like the original the same.
Yeah.
So, but time didn't like make it worse for me. Yeah. But time did better for this. Like, I mean, so I guess moral of this little story is if you don't like a movie right away, but you enjoy it enough. Give it some time. Check it out again. I mean, you don't have to, obviously, but give it a time. Check
that's
it out again
been,
and see where you're at.
That's always been my playing
play
footsie. That's always been my rule is if I didn't like a movie or even if I did like a movie and it was something that I just really care to revisit it in 5 years, a year, whatever.
I mean,
your opinions may change.
I mean, I've done that with Cabin in the Woods so many times and it hasn't changed.
It could go
either way.
I've done that with the original Exorcist like 4 times and my opinion has not changed.
So it just depends.
It just depends. But yeah, if it's a movie that you...
It also depends on the mood you're in.
That too. You do have to be in a certain mood. Like for Black Christmas, you have to be in just a wild fucking like campy mood.
Black
Xmas.
Yeah, that was called Black Xmas. And you know what? This could have been like the perfect like remake, like after remake after remake. And I say it because there's been 2 remakes.
That's true. Yes, 2006 and 2019.
Yeah, and the 2019.
It's okay.
Yes, but here's the issue. It was filmed rated R. It was filmed at 1 hour and 51 minutes. What we got was PG-13 and 93 minutes. So, like...
What the fuck? Where's my unrated cut of that movie?
And we probably would have got it if it made money, but no one saw it because no one cared about it.
Yeah, because exactly.
And to be fair, I don't care about it either.
I think I gave it like 2.5 or maybe a 3, but...
I maybe gave it a 2.5 because I was, you know, I was just being nice.
Yeah, it was whatever. But yeah, definitely Black Christmas for me, the original is the best. I do love the 2006 remake. It's just like the gore is amazing.
Oh, it's really good.
It's good. It's practical. There's no CG bullshit.
And even though they kind of like put their own story into the remake, there's a lot of homage and respect given from the original, either with the way the characters are mm-hmm. written or the way that certain things are used to kill certain people in these movies.
In
both of them, like, and all three of them actually. Like, I will give the newest remake props for using certain props from the other two movies to kill somebody.
Give you props for props.
So, I think rewatching this, like, honestly, it's the perfect double feature. Is rewatch the original, then rewatch this one. You could do it the same night or right after, but make sure one of them's fresh in your brain. And I say that because I think you'll appreciate it more because of, even though it's a 2006, you know, 2006 horror is just all about, you know, boobs, language, and violence, whatever. I mean,
and then,
honestly, every ingredient.
They don't really exploit the nudity in this.
There's, like, a little bit.
It doesn't feel overdone.
Even in the underrated version, they don't add any extra nudity or anything to it. I mean, one of the quick subplots are somebody cheating and a little, like, porn video, but, like, it doesn't really show anything, though. It literally just shows the act happening with a different person, to signify cheating.
Right.
Some of the items that were used to kill characters off in the remake were the same exact items to kill people in the original. And also, one of the actresses in the original came back to play the house mother in the remake.
I was gonna say, yeah, she came back to play Mrs. Mack, I think.
Whoever the house mother's name is.
Whoever she is.
But that actress was in the original, playing one of the college students.
Correct. Yes. And I really do. Yeah, I love the remake. It's a lot of fun. I feel like they do their own thing, but they do pay plenty of homage.
Yes, plenty of it.
Plenty of it. And
if anything, it's also got like the same runtime. No, the original is 98 minutes. Never mind, I take that back.
I was gonna say the remake was 93, unrated. But what's crazy is I noticed today. I noticed today that the movie's only about an hour and 23. There's 9 minutes of fucking credits.
Yeah,
that's a lot for a 90-minute movie. Usually a 90-minute movie is like five, 6 minutes.
Well, I mean, so early on, like, you needed to make a certain runtime to get a theatrical release.
That's right.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember what that is, but I'm going to go at least an hour and 20 because, yeah. So you just
make your credits long.
I mean, they did that with, you hear the movie Darkness Falls?
Yeah.
The credits are like 12 minutes long because the movie is an hour and 17 or something, and they wanted to get it a theatrical run.
Oh my god!
There's no reason for that. And when you watch it, it's literally like watching paint dry. The credits. That's how slow they are.
Yeah, you're just like
on purpose. They basically took 5 minutes and turned it into 11 on purpose because they wanted to get a theatrical run, which honestly didn't make a difference because that movie didn't do shit.
Yeah, the movie
sucks.
Great. Well, I noticed in Black Christmas it was like this person. And then this person.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a way you could do it.
This person, and it was like 15 people, and then it finally went to a very slow crawl.
Yep.
Credits. I'm like,
which is
Jesus.
Crazy now because you can make like an hour and like 27 minute movie, like you know, soak wet, and the movie's only like an hour and 20, and it gets the theatrical run, and there's
no problem. Yeah,
but just like in the 90s, the whole reason why The Matrix was rated R is because you can't show bullet casings on screen.
And they had so
and
many.
And that's all it was once the shooting started. It was all bullet casings.
There's a scene where the shot is...
It's bullet casings.
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, you weren't allowed to show bullet casings on screen without it being rated R. And honestly, that movie didn't need to be... It could have easily passed for PG-13.
There's not really any language.
There's no... I mean, there's shit, but like, yeah. But there's worse language than PG-13
these
days.
There's not really any blood.
There's no blood.
Much.
There's no sex. Except for the... So,
well,
no,
the sex scene in the second one.
Well, that... And I was getting to that. The reason why that was... The Wachowskis literally put that in there because, like, fuck it. It's going to be rated R
It's
anyway.
Going to be rated R. Let's,
why
yeah.
don't we do it?
Yeah, might as well.
And so they added that in a little, like, rave orgy scene throughout, like, which whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't, like, take away from the movie. It made sense because with the world building and stuff. So, like, I'm not that it mattered, but,
yeah,
like...
it didn't feel out of place. I was just like, hey.
But their mentality was, well, it's going to be rated R anyways. Fuck it. And I'm like, honestly, I would have said the same thing because why not?
Give us a little skin, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
Just a little bit.
I mean, who doesn't want to see two people have sex with a bunch of holes in their body?
With all the plugs that they
I've never been sold. I can't say that. There's a couple of movies where I've encountered awkward sex scenes. That's one of them.
Yeah, that was one of them.
It's like two robots having sex with flesh skin. It's weird.
Yeah, it's very odd. Man, that was a great conversation. We just fucking went with that, and there was no holes barred or whatever that fucking phrase is. Man. I'm all excited over here for this movie now.
Are your nipples still hard?
Yeah, we got to talk about. Sorry, it is the advent calendar. Welcome to modern Christmas horror December. I don't have a fucking clever title for it. We're talking about the advent calendar because there is a very prominent the in front of this. I thought it was just advent calendar. No. It is the.
Yeah.
Advent calendar. Yeah.
The word the is very prominent.
Yeah.
If you're just watching Advent calendar, you get a whole different movie.
You get a whole different movie. We'll get there in a minute. I've got some horror news for you, Mr. Spencer, here. So we spoke about this last week. Robert Eggers' Nosferatu is going to be releasing next Christmas.
What an edge, right? Like, to tell us this year that we're getting it next year, like, what an edge.
It's not even Christmas, and I have to wait another Christmas. The fuck?
And let's hope it doesn't get pushed back.
The fuck, Robert Eggers? So, yeah.
He knows how to edge us, though.
I mean, Edge is almost in his last name. Robert Eggers. Edgers.
Or like Edgers.
Yeah, I'm just going to call him Robert Edgers. Fucking Jesus. So, yeah, Nosferatu will land in theaters on December 25th of next year. Yes, that is just over a year away. I'm sure it will probably enjoy a festival run closer to the date. Probably like Fantastic Fest or Beyond Fest. But if so, the non-festival going crowd will have a bit longer to wait. But get excited because let's talk about who's in this. We've got Bill Skarsgård as Count Orlok, which is amazing. Yeah. I haven't seen him in another creature since Pennywise. I mean,
we know he's going to nail it.
Oh, no, for sure. You've got Nicholas Holt. You've got Lily Rose Depp. You've got Aaron Taylor Johnson. You've got Emma Corman, Ralph Ineson, who is, you might most notably know him from The Witch as the dad in The Witch.
He's also in.
No, he's in a whole bunch of shit.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're talking about Robert Eggers.
I guess Robert, yeah. Is he not in any other Robert Eggers movies? Is that the only one? Was he in The Northman?
No, he's not in The Northman. Well, he might be in The Northman, but he's not in The Lighthouse.
Yeah, no, I know he wasn't in The Lighthouse.
I think he might be in The Northman. You also have Simon McBurney and Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Let's go. Willem Dafoe.
Speaking of Willem Dafoe, did you hear about his role in Beetlejuice 2?
Yeah, he's playing a dead cop.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
And speaking of that, thank you for bringing that up. That is actually wrapped production. They're done shooting.
Yep.
So we'll see that.
September.
Oh, there's a release date too?
Oh, there's been a release date since day one. Next September.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like, and I don't know, obviously, but the biggest reason why they kept the release date is because when the strike started, there was only literally a day and a half left of filming. So it was an easy, once it all got ready to get everybody together, it was an easy shoot pretty much. So that's why I kept its release date of September. Mid-September or end of September. But
so September. We're going to get that before we get this.
Correct.
Son of a bitch.
I mean, I'm okay with that. I'm fine.
Focus Features describes Eggers' remake as, quote, a gothic tale of obsession between a haunted young woman and the terrifying vampire infatuated with her, causing untold horror in its wake. If there's one person that can do Nosferatu, it's fucking Robert Eggers.
Him or a Del Toro, 100%.
Yeah, and Del Toro's doing Frankenstein next year.
He did Crimson Peak, which gave us like a gothic horror.
Oh, so good. So, yeah, I know that Eggers is going to fucking nail this. And yes, we've had vampire movies, but I don't think we've actually had, like, a Nosferatu.
Incorrect. We've had a movie actually called Nosferatu.
Since 1922?
Oh, I should have let you finish.
Sorry, I meant since the original.
Oh, okay. I should have let you finish, but I was like, he's going to say there hasn't been one, and I want to say wrong.
No, I meant there hasn't been one since the original. I don't think there. I mean,
in its own vein, probably. I don't think so either.
I mean, I can do a
maybe.
I can do a quick little search
just
key right here.
Do a little Google search.
But like, I'm pretty sure Nosferatu, 1922. Okay, so we've had something called Nosferatu the Vampire in 1979.
Never heard of it, but okay.
And then Nosferatu in Venice in 1988.
I have heard of that actually.
Okay, but like. Nosferatu in Brazil. Okay, we're just taking Nosferatu and putting him in different places.
I mean, he's when he gets run out of his home, where he's got to go somewhere else. I mean, that's what the plot of most of these vampire movies is: get the fuck out of Transylvania. I'm like, okay, where am I going to go? I'll just go to Brazil. It's fine.
Okay, and then Nosferatu the first vamp. So there's been a few iterations, but like, okay. No, so for example, Nosferatu in Brazil. 27 minutes, not counting that.
Oh, okay.
Not counting that
at all.
So they're
just little shorts.
Nosferatu in Venice, 97. Okay, you can count that. You can count that. Nosferatu the Vampire, 107 minutes. Okay, count that. Ooh, and that's got a 3.9. Okay. And that's on Shout TV and Peacock Premium, so go check that out if you want.
Fancy.
Okay, so there's been little iterations here and there, but nothing past, like, the 90s. So we haven't had, like, a it's been Nosferatu something something.
Yeah.
So we haven't had just a straight Nosferatu remake since 1922, besides the ones I've mentioned here and there. And that's exciting, because, like, that was a very... That was a movie that was very ahead of its time, especially for 1922. I mean, come on. Like, you're talking about almost over 100 years ago, 101 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see Eggers, you know, and like I said, he has a way of making old horror, like, you know, like movies set in an old time, like The Witch set in like the 1500s, I think. The Lighthouse set, you know, in the 1800s, I believe. It makes them feel terrifying. And the Lighthouse really wasn't even really a horror movie. It was more of like a sci-fi kind of...
It was more psychological.
More psychological, but, yeah. You know,
that could be scary.
Yeah, he has a very good way of making those movies just feel absolutely terrifying. So I am very excited for this.
Yeah.
Very excited. And also very excited for Beetlejuice, too. I mean, it's been 35 years since we've had a Beetlejuice, so...
And we got... Michael Keaton coming back as Beetlejuice. Like
Michael Keaton coming
Tim
back.
Tim Burton coming back as director.
Tim Burton. We've got Jenna Ortega. We've
Winona
got
Ryder
Winona
coming back.
Ryder and, oh my God.
Monica Bellucci.
No.
Well, she's in it too, though.
Oh my God. From Home Alone and Schitt's Creek. What's her
name?
Catherine O'Hara. I'm so sorry. Avid listener of the show, Catherine O'Hara. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me.
I also was like, wait, she listens to this? No. I was like, wait a minute. That's awesome.
So next up here, Fede Alvarez's new Alien movie.
Dude, I'm so fucking stoked.
Gets a place in the franchise timeline.
So
Let's
excited.
Fucking go. So it's been a hot minute since we've had any concrete new information about Fede Alvarez's upcoming Alien movie. But last night, a new interview with star Kaylee Spani revealed where exactly the new standalone entry fits into the overarching Alien franchise. In an interview with Variety, the Priscilla star revealed that the allegedly titled Alien Romulus is supposed to slot in between the first movie and the second movie. For those not brushed up on their Alien lore, Scott's 1979 original is set in the year 2122, with James Cameron's 1986 sequel Aliens seeing Ripley return to fight the Xenomorphs in 2179, approximately 57 years later. So this is going to take place in between 2122 and 2179. So that's fun. It's like a prequel sequel kind of.
It's like Saw X.
Yeah, it's exactly like Saw X. Yes, because it fits in between one and two. Oh my God, this is literally the Saw X of the Alien franchise. Hello, are you listening, people? This is amazing.
Let's hope it's that good.
It will. It's Fede Alvarez.
We're also
getting
an Alien TV show, I think, next year too.
Yes, that is happening as well. So, Spani also revealed more behind-the-scenes details after filming took place in February of this year. Let's just say practical effects loyalists should be very happy. They have brought on the same team that did Aliens, the James Cameron film.
Nice.
The same people who built those xenomorphs actually came on and built ours, speaking in reference of them. So getting to see the original design with the original people who have been working on these films for 45 years plus has been so much of their life has been really incredible. So
that's awesome.
That is amazing. We're talking, I mean, it's Fede Alvarez too. Like, he doesn't really use, you know,
but sometimes you kind of have to, like with Aliens, I mean, they're not real. So
I know, but like,
or are they?
He used some CG in Crawl. He had to. Wait, that wasn't Fede Alvarez.
Yeah,
that was Alexander Aja. Excuse me.
Wow.
Don't mind me. I always get them confused. He used a little bit of like CG in
Evil Dead remake.
A little bit. Like, with, you know, there was one.
I mean, he kind of had to.
But like, most of it was practical. Like,
just like that was his way of homaging the originals.
So this is exciting. Starring alongside Spani are Isabel Merced, David Johnson, Archie Renew, Spike Fern, and Ayan Wu. So far, the details of the standalone story remains tightly under wraps, but with a whole 57 years of plot time to play with, it could really go anywhere. We're seeing this next year, August 16th, 2024. this next year is already shaping up to be amazing. We've got Nosferatu. We've got an Aliens movie. We've got fucking Beetlejuice 2. Like, next year's already fucking massive.
We're getting also Black Phone 2.
And no, that's 2025.
Oh, damn it.
That's actually, I think that might be next up. Oh, no, that's Stephen King. Where's Black? There it is right there. Let's go to Black Phone 2. Black Phone 2. Black Phone 2 is returning with Ethan Hawke and Mason Thames for the Blumhouse sequel. After racking up a cool $161 million worldwide last year, a sequel to the Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill's Black Phone was pretty much a given. And today, well, whenever this was, Deadline has exclusively confirmed that Ethan Hawke is set to return alongside the original cast of Jeremy Davies, Miguel Mora, and Fangoria Chainsaw Award winner Mason Thames and Madeline McGraw. Deadline has also confirmed that the theatrical release will be June 27, 2025. Has been set for the Blumhouse Horror, and Derrickson and Cargo will return to pen the sequel.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. It's based on the Joe Hill short of the same name. The Black Phone followed a 13-year-old boy abducted by a child killer in a suburban neighborhood and locked in a soundproof basement, who then begins to receive calls on a disconnected phone line from the killer's previous victims. Deadline reminds us that Black Phone 2 will mark the ninth feature collaboration between powerhouse Jason Blum and Ethan Hawke after Black Phone, Purge, Sinister 1 and 2, In a Valley of Violence, Adopt a Highway, Hamlet, and Stockholm. So they've worked together a lot. I didn't realize they worked together this much. Let's see.
Those are all pretty solid.
Pretty solid movies. I haven't seen Adopt a Highway, Hamlet, or Stockholm, but I've seen all the others.
And The Valley of Violence is so good.
Way good. That's Ty West, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As Ty West Western. It's not even a horror film. It's just the Western.
Ty West goes West.
Ty Western.
How exactly Hawke will be returning is yet to be seen, as The Grabber met a pretty, shitty ending. But hey, this is horror. Anything could happen.
I did have a really cool idea of if it didn't end the way it did.
Oh,
so
okay.
So this really isn't any spoilers because I'm making up my own shit, sort of. So this is my quote unquote alternate ending for the Black Phone, knowing that the Black Phone 2 is the thing. And I thought about this almost immediately after I heard Black Phone 2 was happening because I don't know why. So say Ethan Hawke's character, the Grabber, got arrested. And he somehow escapes, either he's in prison for like a year and escapes, or you know, they do that trope where he escapes on the way to prison, whatever. But then, because he knows the sister, the girl, was the one that got him caught and found the brother,
yeah,
he goes after her instead now, and now it's up to the brother. So they're kind of reiterating the first one a bit, but they're swapping who gets kidnapped in a sense. But now, she gets kidnapped, and he somehow, he goes back to the old house to the Black Phone, and the Black Phone, whoever's on the other line, helps him again find his sister now.
Okay.
And somehow along the way, he gets those little dreams that his sister has. So now it's kind of reiterating the first movie, but now the stakes are a little higher because he's now just out for revenge and not just snatching kids up for whatever reason.
Yeah, I like
that. So it turned the sequel into like a little revenge tale if, you know, the ending didn't end the way it did. I thought that would be, you know, it would be like the same thing, but a little fresh.
It would exactly be that.
And I think it would give, and you know, Ethan Hawke, you know, I thought he was great in that movie, but like, you know, he's a great actor, and they didn't really give him, you know, he doesn't have a huge amount of screen time. Mm-mm. Which, I mean, to be fair, that's fine. But this one would give him more screen time. I feel like more, and when I say action, I don't mean like violence. I mean like more room to do things. Like he'll have more movement. He'll have more screen time in this one.
Yeah, I can see that.
And more like a revenge flick versus just a snatch and grab horror.
It's either going to be something like that or it's going to be a prequel or something. I don't know.
I'm kind of hoping for a prequel. Because
I want to see more of the Grabber grabbing people than just one kid.
Or also maybe like give us backstory of why are you the way you are?
Exactly. Tell me what made you go down this path, Mr. Ethan Hawke?
Because he's very. I'm not going to really go into the super spoilers just in case somebody hasn't seen it. But like, there's a lot of interesting things that we see with his character, and obviously not just grabbing, but like the way he lures the kids in is not necessarily like, hey, I have a lost puppy in my truck. It kind of is, but it's not.
Yeah.
Like, he makes it seem like, you know, he's like, and you see this in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler unless you haven't seen the trailer, which, okay, whatever. But at this point, he's like, I'm a magician, blah, blah, blah. Like, do you want to see things? Which, and I'm like, okay, why pick magician? I mean, yeah, kids love magicians, don't get me wrong, but like, he goes all out with the theatrical, with the balloons, the makeup, mm-hmm. the outfit. Like, he goes all out, and there's got to be a reason for that. I mean, when you're kidnapping somebody, you don't really go that out of your way to make a theatrical appearance. You're just like, fuck it, you're coming with me. I mean, there's more methodical than that, but you know what I'm saying.
And this was also in the 70s, too, so...
So
people were much more trusting back then, and yeah. you didn't have to make this whole scene.
Yeah, so he made this up. He made this story, possibly made this entire story up in his head. And also, like, his different collection of masks throughout the whole film, like...
Oh, I love like, how they kept changing.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm not mad at it, but, like, A, where'd you get them? B, why'd you choose them? And C, like, who actually did hurt you?
Yeah.
Because you're literally just sitting in the chair... And
guarding the yeah
sleeping
fucking daddy hawk over
yeah,
here,
but you're also like playing games with the kids, but like I'm gonna leave this door slightly open to see if you escape, and if you do, I can't wait to play hoo-hoo. Like, it's weird. So like, there's so many questions. I want at least a 30 minute backstory, and then give me the
rest of the movie.
The sequel.
Okay,
that's what I want.
I like it. I'm here for it, and I'm very excited. We have to wait, oh my god, even longer than Nosferatu and all these other movies, but hey, 2025, Black Phone 2. That gives them plenty of time to work out all the kinks and make this movie amazing. Because the first one was amazing as well. So, I mean, that's just my opinion.
I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. The only other thing I can think of right now that I have is we're getting Thanksgiving 2. I don't...
Oh, yeah.
I
expected it, but I didn't expect it. So, like, I expected it on terms of money. Because money.
It's been killing it.
But also, I didn't expect it because, like, it didn't... Because
we don't need it.
I agree. Like,
we don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, like, you know, with Friday the 13th, you know, Halloween, whatever. We can get sequels. Like, you can do so much with that. But like, I don't want Thanksgiving to become another like whole Scream thing. Like, because essentially, Thanksgiving was Scream. Essentially,
well,
was
yeah,
Scream.
And that's what people want. I think that's what people want because of the whole. I talked about this last week.
Oh, the whole Scream.
Yeah, the whole Scream scenario.
Which, I mean, okay, I mean, cool. If we don't ever get another Scream movie, sure, give us another Scream movie in form of a different movie.
Thanksgiving. But
I'm
like,
okay with that.
I was so ready for this just to be a one-off.
Yeah, like...
I didn't want another one!
Like, and honestly, for you saying that, that's pretty special.
Because, yeah, it's Eli... I love Eli Roth, and I will love everything he ever does, and it's
but
like...
But he doesn't really do... I don't think... Has he ever done a sequel?
Hostel 2.
Oh, fuck, yeah, yes.
But, like, that's pretty much it. I mean,
yeah.
Cabin Fever, one-off. Well, there was other
sequels.
His one-off. Green Inferno, one-off. Knock Knock, one-off.
I mean, you can't really do that many times.
House of the Clock and its Walls, one-off.
One-off.
So, yeah, he's really only done one sequel, and that was Hostel 2. And there's also a Hostel 3, but, again, not his.
Not his. It just happens to be.
And he's coming back to do the sequel of Thanksgiving, so that makes me happy.
Yeah, at least we know it's going to be quality.
That makes me happy, but it's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
But then again, how many times have we said that with the Scream movies? What are you going to...
I know.
But I think this one's a little different.
This one is a little different. It's fine. I'm going to go see it. It's fine. Everything's okay.
It's like, thank you. I've always wanted to do a franchise. And I'm like, you've had Hostel. Now that we talked about it. But in my head, I'm like, the Hostels were okay to have a franchise because the first one... Because they're both different in, like, in their own way. Like, the first one was guys attacking girls. And the second one, it was kind of like girls attacking guys.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like, the girls are actually, like, it was the same type of thing, but it was kind of different. And honestly,
hey,
The second one was better.
So if he can give us a Thanksgiving movie that, I mean, I already gave the first Thanksgiving a very high rating. So if he can somehow make the second one better, like, if he can do to Thanksgiving what he did to Hostel, I'm fucking in. And I believe he can. But
in this case, there's not that, like, with the Hostel, there's so much material. With Thanksgiving, there's not so much.
There's so much you can work on with the first Hostel. You're right.
Now, yeah, and I guess what I would, going back to, like, you know, Black Phone 2, but, like, not that it matters, but, like, maybe we get a...
like a prequel.
Well, not necessarily a prequel, but, like, a backstory of who John Carver was, obviously,
before.
Yeah, like, why pick John Carver... As, like in there, they you know, that's their mascot in the Thanksgiving Day parade and stuff.
Yeah.
But why? Who is John Carver?
Maybe maybe they go into that.
Like, was he an old-timey like was he an old-timey, I don't know, like serial killer back in like, you know, 1700s or whatever? Like, who was he?
You're picking up the mantle now and using him as a guise.
Yeah, like, which I mean, okay, in that case, cool. That's
cool.
That's using a familiar serial killer face to become a.
I can't wait to just theorize on this for however long it takes for it to come out, and just keep thinking about, all right, what can they possibly do? Because I can go down a million rabbit trails on what they could possibly do.
But I can think of, like, you know, you start out with the backstory of John Carver, and then you continue. Do what they do with the, like, you can use the Scream method, you know.
Well, yeah.
The whoever survived in the first one, you're going to see where their lives are at in the second one, and they're going to be your new, like, Neve Campbell, or they're going to be your new Scream King or Queen.
Yeah.
To be like, these are the rules. Like, oh shit, this happened to me, blah, 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 years ago. Like, whatever. But then you go into more of the lore of who John Carver is, even if he's obviously not a real person. Make some bullshit up.
Make something up, yeah.
And honestly, I think that would be fine. If they do it like that would be fine. I mean, there's just. With
there's
things like
so
this, there's
ways.
So much you can. There's so many ways you can literally ruin this movie, and I don't want any of those ways to happen because
just don't ruin it.
Because there's so many times where a sequel is like, why even make this? Now the first one's tarnished and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Why did you do that to me?
Just don't fuck up the first one. That's all I care about. Don't fuck up the first one. But it's coming at some point. We'll let you know when it's happening.
I'm sure he's already starting on it.
Oh yeah, let's talk about this movie here. Let's do this. I've had a lot of fun talking to you about all this horror news shit, but let's go on to this movie here. I'm going to blow through this really quickly because there's not a lot going on here. So I'm glad we talked a little over, honestly. So the Advent Calendar from 2021, released on December 2nd of that year in the U.S., we've got mild sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, mild profanity, mild alcohol, drugs and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes, coming in at an hour 40, not an hour 44. Mine was an hour 40. Listed as a horror thriller, directed by Patrick Ridgemont, who only directed three things. One of them is called Dead Man Talking. He was more of an actor than anything. Also written by Patrick Ridgemont, who only wrote five things, including Dead Man Talking. Composed by two people, Thomas Corzinier, who also composed 16 episodes of a show called Black Spot for Netflix, and also Frederick Kushmanian, who also did the same thing as Tomek Corzinier. Cinematography by N.A. Have no idea who did that. There was nothing listed on IMDb. Edited by Thierry Delvinge, who also edited Dead Man Talking. Starring Eugene Durand as Ava. I hope I'm saying all this right. I'm so sorry if I'm not. This is her top build.
It's probably got more of an accent to her because it's French, but yeah.
I don't have much of an accent. I'm not even going to try. then we have Horeen Magnier as Sophie. This is also her top build movie. Then we've got Clement Olivieri as William. Guess what? This is his top build movie.
What?
Then we've got Janice Abrique as Antoine, who has done plenty of other things that I have not heard of. And then we have Cyril Garnier as Boris, and the same goes for him. Done some things I haven't heard of. Estimated budget of NA with a worldwide box office gross of $456,000. This movie was filmed.
I'm going to guess it bombed. Just
well,
by
I
guessing.
Mean, it's a Shudder original.
Well, yeah, but
so it went straight to Shudder, but it also did the festival circuit.
That's what I'm saying.
So it made some money.
It made some money. But even if you make a, you know, regardless if it's original, if you made a $4 million movie and you made only a couple thousand, it's still a bomb.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's how it goes for streaming movies, you know, like
unless which I think all movies should do that, have a brief theatrical run.
They should
a month or so before it hits streaming.
This movie was filmed in France. You can watch this on AMC Plus or Shudder. Movies that came out around the same time, we have Eternals, Spencer.
Oh, yeah, that did come out.
Yeah.
That's
Black Friday,
movie.
Encanto, House of Gucci, Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, Spider-Man, No Way Home, The Matrix Resurrections, and The King's Man.
You know, it's actually kind of, it's crazy that, like, normally when we like movies that came out around this time, they're not movies that came out in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, so we're looking at this, I'm like, looking at this list, I'm like, wait a minute. Like, oh, yeah, that came out in 2021. Because usually we do movies that were like 80s or
90s. 90s, yeah. Did you have a specific horror moment, sir?
Oh, damn it. Can't do spoilers yet. It's too young.
No, you can.
Oh, I mean, you usually do like 10 years.
No, we're doing spoilers all the time now.
Fuckers.
Yeah, there is a warning in the description of spoilers, so suck it.
I mean, that's fair. Honestly, I thought the most of the kills. The cabin at the end was kind of horrific.
The cabin at the end.
So when she goes into the cabin, not the end, like midway with their friend, and their friends are having sex, and he eats the penis pill or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he turns into like some rapid dog and kills. I'm like, what the fuck? Like I was like, this isn't the Viagra that I was promised.
Yeah, this is something way worse.
But also the beginning with the dog eating the car, and then you see the aftermath of all that.
That was good too.
It was cool. But yeah, it was pretty horrific. I was like, what the fuck?
My horror moment was when Eva's talking to her father, who has Alzheimer's. So she's talking to him, and he's speaking coherently to her. And he's like, so the box is going to ask for sacrifices.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty.
When it's my time, kill me. And I was like, ah! I was like, holy shit, that was so dark and like disturbing.
Also, wasn't that on like a disconnected phone?
No. They were in person on that.
Oh,
one.
That was the in person part. Okay.
That was the
in person
part.
There's a couple of instances, I guess. Okay.
Where he calls, there's one where he calls her and wishes her happy birthday.
Oh, yeah, that was in the beginning of the happy birthday.
Like, she's like, what the fuck? Like, my dad has Alzheimer's. He wouldn't remember that because even Agnes was like, he's forgotten about you entirely. So that's why it hit so hard because. You're established that he's forgotten about her. He wouldn't know it's her birthday. He's already wished her a happy birthday. And he's like, hey, this box is going to ask for sacrifices. When it's my turn, off me. And you're like, ah, dad, I don't want to do that. Favorite. Oh, my God. Let me throw my phone. Favorite kill. Did you have one?
No, I thought they're all pretty cool, to be honest. I didn't necessarily have like that one's better than the others. I thought they were all pretty inventive.
I really liked William's kill because of what happened. So you have William taking the advent calendar and throwing it in the river. And after he throws it in the river, the sky goes purple. And he sees that being just like come out of the water.
That was that was pretty cool.
It wasn't really even necessarily a kill. It was just everything that happened around it. And he gets in his car to leave. And as soon as he backs his car up, the being is right at his window, punches the window and drags him out and then just drowns him in the water. And I was like, oh my God. It was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So that was a really good kill. Did you have a favorite character? Mine was just Eva.
I mean,
she was doing her best.
She was my favorite till like the last like 20 minutes, but like I understand why. Like it's nothing against her. She just she had to
do what she
was told. Yeah. So yeah, she was my favorite. I mean, I obviously really really like the dog because the dog.
Yeah, poor dog.
I mean, is it really a horror movie unless there's ill-fated to a dog?
You didn't at least see it. You saw the aftermath and her raising her knife up, but you didn't actually. So, like, thank God. Thank you for not showing me, but, like, come on, man.
It's like the biggest horror show. If you ever see a dog in a horror film, no. 9 times out of 10, it's not.
That's
it's
why
not
I love
out.
Crawl so much, because I'm like, that motherfucker survives. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess when you're going, when it's just alligators and not like people, human, like being shitty people.
When you're going up against actual creatures, the
like,
dog.
Like they're like, oh, you're a creature too. I'm going to fuck this human up because they're not creatures.
Yeah, so my favorite character was Eva. My least favorite character was definitely Sophie because she's the reason all of this fucking happened.
Right?
She stole the advent calendar and gave it to Eva. So fuck you. Why didn't you steal it and keep it for yourself,
right?
You fucking bitch.
Gosh.
God.
I mean, she got what she was. I mean, she technically got what she deserved.
And I can't wait to talk about that ending, too. Oh, my God. My favorite line was just the dump it and I'll kill you. I was just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like oh, shit. Okay.
Don't throw this away.
Right? Yeah, just straight simple. I'm going to threaten you in the most simplistic way.
Yeah, get rid of this
and
you're
you
going to die.
I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay.
Oh, my God. IMDb summary. Eva is a paraplegic. On her birthday, her friend Sophie gives her a strange advent calendar. It's not the traditional treats you find when you open each drawer, but quirky gifts that are scary and get bloodier. Yes, they do. And I think what's funny about this movie is I thought it was going to, I honestly was kind of hoping for an anthology of like 24 different tales. But honestly, that would be
cool.
I think someone should do that. You know, advent calendar, 24 short stories. But honestly, that would take a lot of work.
So like an ABCs of Death, but like,
yes.
but like
advent calendar. Make them Christmassy. Take ABCs of Death and make it fucking Christmassy. But yeah, so the second I knew that it wasn't going to be like that because it starts out, you know, with there's some stuff in the beginning I don't care about, but you get to December 3rd, that's where we start, and that's when Eva gets the advent calendar from Sophie, and it goes over the first 3 days pretty quickly, and it gives you these rules too, which is pretty interesting. The first rule is if the calendar contains candy, if you eat one, you have to eat them all, or I'll kill you. Rule two, respect all rules until you open the last door, or I'll kill you. And rule number three, dump it and I'll kill you. There's a lot of killing going on.
It's a very, very, a lot very murderous advent calendar.
Very murderous
not,
advent
not
calendar.
Not jolly at all.
It's not jolly at all. What the fuck? So day one is something I can't remember. Day two is a piece of candy. It's her dad's favorite candy. It's a After Eight bar or something like that.
I'm pretty
that.
Sure After Eight also sponsored this movie because Jesus Christ.
It was like in six different times. And then day three is a card that says to cure hurt, destroy what hurt you. And then I love when she tries to open day four, but day four is locked because you can't open days prematurely because that motherfucker on top will be like, Usch to midnight, fucking German talking.
Yeah, so it's crazy. This is a French movie with a German advent calendar. It's great.
Yeah.
And like, I wonder if she understood anything that he said.
No, because she kept having to have Sophie translate all the written...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
So there's no way she understood anything that was in German.
God, Sophie, first of all, you steal us. And second of all, like...
It's not German.
It's in the wrong language. Couldn't even switch to subtitles. Gosh.
Yeah, and then day four is yet another piece of candy that reads, and Sophie has to read this. It says, Jesus said to the cripple, arise and walk. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Eva. I didn't realize this was going to get personal. Because that's exactly what happens.
Germans get personal, bro.
She's a paraplegic. She does not have the use of her legs. I'm just going to go through the days because I think it's really fun.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's when Sophie leaves. Eva gets a call from her dad saying happy birthday. But something's obviously off. Eva's having trouble at work, too. She has a new coworker that's trying to, like, take over her job. And they go out for dinner and drinks with Boris and Thomas. And this was the biggest issue I had with this movie is Boris ends up taking Eva home and he tries to sexually assault her. And I was like, why are we adding this into the movie? The only time I'm going to allow that is when it's like a rape revenge. The only time I'm going to be okay, this is integral to the plot.
In a way, it was integral to the plot. Now, while driving home, he sexually assaults her. And the final words that she says to him is drop dead, and he's the first kill.
Okay. True.
So it's intricate to like, why did he die? What was the point? So now we have to put in a little like reasoning why he died. Oh, you sexually assaulted me. You're dead.
He was the first sacrifice.
He was the, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So okay. In a way, it was kind of rape revenge, in a way.
Yeah. Okay.
So as she gets pushed out of the car or whatever, she yells, drop dead. And you're like, I mean, yeah, that's pretty great. And then like when she first opens the advent calendar, it's that little car. And then the dog's eating the car. And then you see on the other side of that,
his car getting destroyed while
he's in there. And then you find out the next day. And throughout, when she's thinking about it, you hear her saying drop dead in the distance of why he died.
Oh, my God. And this entire time, too, there's this being that's been seen. Like, you just kind of got to cut to shots of this being looking. I don't even know how to explain him. You just need to see the movie. And he's just kind of menacing. So it's almost like this being just wants sacrifices, and he will do, or he or she will do whatever it takes to get said sacrifices.
Yeah.
So it's almost like that situation happened because he was like, I need.
Exactly. So the sexual assault was necessary for the plot.
Yeah, it was necessary for.
And
that,
honestly,
yeah.
He was kind of. You got the term. You know, you got the feeling he was kind of a scumbag anyway. So why not give him a little bit more?
Of course, he was a scumbag.
So why not give him more of a scumbag scene, right?
So day six is a candy shaped heart, and she puts that in the mulled wine of
this dude she finds cute,
William, who she had seen earlier at the park. after the whole sexual assault thing happened, she saw him, and Sophie was like, go talk to him. And she's like, what? And say, I'm a paraplegic. Hi. And I was like, that's so sad, but it's kind of funny because it's like, she almost like has a sense of humor.
She does. She even said something like, oh, what is it, nurse? And he's going to wash my private parts for me?
Yeah. And then he comes up and says that to her, and she's like, what?
He's
like,
and then he's also like, wait, why did I say
what
that?
What did I just say? It's that it's because he, like, I feel like all the candy is like some sort of drug that kind of, it's very weird because day 7 is a clock-shaped candy that she takes and 4 days go by.
Yep.
And she gets fired from her job and she has no idea what's happening. And she realizes that all the candy wrappers make up like a bigger picture. And it's one of the places that the guy told her to, like, Boris, he was a day trader. So he's like, I'm going to give you these credits and you can go invest and do this and that.
And she ended up being rich.
And she ended up being rich because of what happened from that. So we cut to day 11 into dog treat for Marvin. Little Marvin. I love it. He walks up and grabs it and eats it. It's great. And but unfortunately, the next morning when Eva goes to look for him, she can't find him. And then he eventually comes inside and got blood all over him. And you realize that he killed her boss. And you're like, people are starting to drop like flies in this shit. And then she gets a couple more candies that are the same. It's the little Jesus candies. She gets like 5 or 6 of those, which are the get up and walk, essentially. So what you are starting to realize from this is that she is going to get something from this advent calendar, but she's going to have to make sacrifices Boris.
You make a deal with the devil, there's always going to be a consequence.
Yeah. So I'm going to kind of skip around here. So when we got to day 10, we have another one of her favorite, her dad's favorite candies on day 14. Day 15 is, again, another one involving her walking again. And she eats it right in front of William this time. And she's like, I can feel your hand on my thigh. Like, oh my God, like I can actually feel like my lower half of my body, which is crazy. So like you can tell that these pills, or not pills, the candy is like actually working. And it's wild because I thought she was just making shit up or she was dreaming it. But no, the candy is actually like fucking working. And one of my favorite parts here is it's leading up to William's kill, because he drives over to Eva's house and he's like, hey, you left your keys in my car. I'm going to leave them in the pot outside your house. He goes to like get in the car and leave, but he notices the door is open. So he's like, okay. So he comes in, shuts the door, goes back to his car and notices the door is open again. He's like, what the fuck? So he goes inside to see what's going on, and he sees Eva's like desk that has everything written down from like day 1 to day 13 of like everything that's happened and who's died and what's going on. And the door slams behind him, and he sees the advent calendar open, and something is written on like this, it looks like a little window. It's like you can see someone writing on it, and it says something in French that I can't read, and you don't know what it is. But he takes the advent calendar and throws it into the river like a dumb fuck.
What a silly goose.
What are you doing? And then that's when he dies, because you shouldn't have done that. You
interfered.
You interfered. You can't get rid of this. You can't get rid of this. And there's a really cool shot because Eva was swimming at the same time that all this happened. And when she dives into the water, she sees William at the bottom of the pool.
Oh, that was so cool.
Beautiful scene. So she swims down to him, realizes that he's dead. She can't save him. And then when she comes back up to the surface, she is where he was at in the river and has no idea what's going on. And the being comes out to her and like gives her the advent calendar and then touches her on the face. And she wakes back up on her couch. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. So
that
good.
Was a beautiful scene.
So good.
So good. Day 17, she eats this glowing little W, which looked really weird. And then everything gets all warpy. And then it goes to some weird time travel shit, because you see her from the other side of the William incident, where he's looking at the advent calendar and she's actually the one
writing
on the window, and it says, don't dump it. So he got a warning that says don't dump it, and then he still fucking dumped it. You son of a bitch. That's on you. Yeah. I mean, at that point, that's on you. Day 18 gets real fucked up, guys. Day 18, a knife pops out with a picture of her dog on it.
Oh,
She has to kill her dog, so she kills her dog. It's fucking, it's horrifying. Day 19, a penis-shaped candy pops out.
Penis candy.
And Sophie takes that because she's the one that it pops out to. So Sophie takes that and gives that to her date when they're trying to have sex, and that fucking does not go well for her.
Nope.
Because he yeets her through the fucking door, just throws her through the door, and then the being is there again, and he kills them both, and he looks at Eva, and, excuse me, sorry, oh my god, I can't remember exactly what happened at that point, but he looks at Eva, and I'm pretty sure something happens there. But yeah, he kills Sophie. The being kills Sophie. The being kills Tomas or Thomas or whatever his name was. And then day 22 is the... Or did I say day 21? Oh, yeah. Day 21 is another candy helping her walk. And she has to eat it. Blah, blah, blah. And day 22 is the little Barbie that looks like the coworker.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she...
that was so satisfying.
That was great. Yeah, because I fucking hated that girl. So she bends her up like a crazy puppet and just
throws her,
throws her out the door.
I honestly would have loved to see the end result of that, but like...
I was... Yeah, that's why that wasn't my favorite kill, because I was kind of hoping that we would see the end result.
Like her just as like a crumbled ball. That would be cool.
That would have been great. And then day 23 is yet another... favorite candy of her dad's and a gun, and this is when she has to go just like put down her dad. It's like super fucking sad. It's such an emotional scene because she raises the gun to kill him like four times. She like raises it up and then can't do it.
The whole time he's just like, yeah,
he's just sitting there just like waiting for his fate. It's so fucking sad. But I love the revenge that she gets on Agnes, because Agnes is his second wife that is kind of taking over things.
Yeah, she's the worst character.
Yeah, and selling the house and trying to just like put him in a home. And what she does is Eva takes the advent calendar, puts it in like a Christmas, you know, like present box, puts it on the porch. And it's the advent calendar in there. And of course, you know, Agnes takes out the advent calendar. It's like, oh, I can't read this. It's in German. Throws it in the fire. And then, you know, the being comes for her and just puts her in the fire.
Yeah,
and
it's pretty
like,
good.
It's like, yes. And then she has to kill her dad. And then here we go. The craziest fucking reveal. Honestly, this movie for me was at a 3.5 until this happened.
Oh, okay.
So day 24, Sophie realizes, because that guy, Antoine, the guy from the fucking
the beginning of the movie,
who was also swimming with her, well, swimming in the same pool and trying to get with her. And she was like, I don't care about you. Leave me alone. He's like, hey, the rules clearly state that you have to follow the rules until you open the 24th box. So there are no rules at this point. He was like, you can eat that candy and start back over at the beginning, because that's what happens. She finds out that, eventually you can start back over at the beginning and none of the actions you've done will have consequences. She'll start, and at this point she's walking.
Yeah.
So she'll start back over as a paraplegic. Everything will be everything.
Now, I feel like at this time she's got a lot of pros and cons to weigh.
Pro,
she's walking.
Yeah.
Pro, her dad will be back. Con, her douchebag boss is still alive. The lady that took her job, basically
Miriam,
alive.
Yeah.
Boris, was that the dude who sexually assaulted
Boris
her?
Boris was the dude who sexually assaulted
He's
her.
He's still alive. So like so those are cons. Pro, the dog's back alive. So there's a lot of pros and cons to weigh, like morality wise. Like do I do this?
What do I do? Just,
exactly. Like,
I can go back to the beginning, be a paraplegic, have my best friend. Have my dog.
Have my dad.
Have my dad.
But I also have all this shit.
But I also have Agnes. I also have Miriam. I also have my boss. I also have Boris.
Yeah.
But I don't eat it, and I have my legs, and I can do whatever I want.
And not that I'm a paraplegic, but I feel like if somehow I'm able to walk again, I wouldn't want to give that up. So that's a tough moral dilemma.
And her dad's in a better place. Let's be honest. Alzheimer's is
true. But at that point, now he can just die on his own terms. Well, I mean, in a sense,
he kind of did.
Yeah, but like she had to kill him, so now that's on her.
I know.
Which
you have a lot to live with. And if you go back to the beginning, you forget everything. Obviously.
Yeah. Which
you won't remember a fucking thing.
So there's just so many pros and cons to weigh at that, and I think that's what's genius about the reveal and the choice that needs to be made, because you could choose to
either way.
You could choose that this to be a really bad dream, that you'll never, you won't remember, or you choose to just deal with what you've done in the last month.
Yeah, and the movie ends with her screaming at the candy. Done, over with. And then you get a little more to the story because she finds a painting in the advent calendar that's kind of hidden that gives her a clue to, there's someone's address on that she goes to and tries to talk to. And he denies everything, but he's like, she's like, no. Like, you had to sacrifice people. It's okay. Like, I understand what's going on. You don't have to admit it to me. She knows what's going on. But she does the same thing for the next person. She leaves a video recording of the rules.
Yeah.
Instead of a painting, she leaves a video recording of the rules. And like, this is what you got to do. This is what's going to happen. Blah, blah, blah. And you get like a, on her door, someone's there that's obviously going through the advent calendar themselves, and the door opens, but no one's there. So you're like, did she take it? Did she not take it? I don't fucking know.
Right.
A brilliant ending to this.
Good.
It's the only way to end this movie. It's like Inception. Did the thing fall over or did it not fall over?
True. I mean, we're still talking about that to the day.
Exactly. No one will ever know. So that is Advent Calendar from 2021. It's a lot of fun. Honestly, I feel like this movie needs to be talked about more. It is a great time. There were no taglines. Let's do some post-review stuff here. There were no taglines. There was two bits of trivia that really aren't even that fascinating, but they're here. So on day 14, when she visits her dad's house number is also 14. And when the guy from the pool, Antoine, leaves Ava's house and closes the gate, the number 17 is visible for a brief moment. The next scene is December 17th. Ha, cool stuff. No goofs, rated 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb, a 3.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd, has an 82% on the tomato meter and a 64% audience score. I gave this a 4 out of 5.
I gave it on both views. This Shocker. Is my second view, so yeah.
Not shocked at all. Yeah, like I said, I was at a 3.5 and then the ending happened and I was like, that's an extra half star for sure. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have As Above, So Below, It Follows, Polaroid, Long Time Dead, and Night House. And similar
those
movies.
Those are all pretty, yeah, those are all pretty solid similars.
Solid movies. And similar movies according to IMDb, we have Moloch, Hatching, Superhost, The Innocents, and Sissy. You said you had some funny reviews, sir.
Yes.
Let's whip those bad boys out. I have, hang on, how many do I have?
I have 4.
I have 4 as well. All right, you go first.
All right, so this one's just two and a half stars. It's worst fucking friend ever.
That's it?
Yes. That's it.
Fucking Sophie.
2.5 stars.
I have a 2.5 stars as well from Haley on Letterboxd. Said, those jump scares felt so forced. Why even use jump scares if none of them are going to be effective? It's so unnecessary and does nothing but ruin the whole experience. Oof, I liked the jump scares. There wasn't even that many.
I was going to say, I it was more like if you're talking about like the reveal of the dude like coming out of nowhere, sure.
There wasn't even that many. There was a couple jump scares, but like.
But not compared to what we have these days in half the movies
No. What do you got?
So this one I wholeheartedly agree with. It's 4 stars. Gotta give me one of those candies that has me forgetting the next 4 days of my life. Take that every month.
3 stars from Zara Gwen. This had some genuinely cool ideas and the concept felt pretty unique. Kind of fell apart as it went along and maybe could have utilized some better ideas. But like, it was so good.
I mean, better ideas. This is the first of its kind. So like, it had like the best
this
idea.
This was the idea.
Like, if you can give me 5 more advent calendar movies, sure, I'll believe you, but you can't. So this one's 3.5 stars. And I also agree with this wholeheartedly. Belly Flop Guy had the calendar figured out in less than 20 minutes, but he can't figure out how to dive? What the fuck?
Dude, that guy, oh my God.
But, like, for real, though. Like, he configured the advent calendar in 20 minutes. Dude, that's on autism right there. That's an autistic person right there. Doesn't know how to dive, but he can figure this shit out.
He
like,
belly flopped.
Yeah.
You're like, what the
that's
fuck?
Why she called Belly Flop Guy.
Oh, my God. I guess I have 5. Okay, so this one is 3 stars, and it just says, different.
Okay. This is my last one at 1.5 stars.
Oh.
I have COVID, and this is literally the worst thing that happened to me in a while.
Oh, my. What?
She compared this movie to COVID, and this was worse than COVID.
I don't know about that. Jeez.
And there's 3 likes to it, so there's 3 people that could agree.
Jesus. All right, my last one. 3 stars from Jordan Beaumont Anderson. gets a little too goofy in the back half and doesn't have the budget to support its wilder technical ideas. But how can you be upset with a movie about a Belgian paraplegic on a Yuletide quest for magic legs who eats significant doses of hallucinogenic candy left by a German demon in a clockwork mini armoire?
If that's not a Dungeons and Dragons episode, I don't know what is.
That's the greatest review of all time.
Like, explain a plot poorly, and that's what he did.
That's exactly what happened. Oh, my God.
That's great.
I love it. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and /Ab at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are Slafferman.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Next week, me and a new person named John are going to be doing a movie from 2019. It is not really a Christmas movie per se, but it is set in a very cold climate. It's going to be a lot of fun. So tune in for that. We'll be here next week. And dead air. My mind went to a million different places right there. Spencer.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm doing. I gotta end the show. My brain is just buffering. All right,
I'll do it.
Until next time, stay tuned and
have a holly jolly spooky Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that was different.
Yeah,
stay spooky.